133693. I'd love you to give me a call on this. It's to me, it's a fascinating dilemma that two sons had to wrestle with. They are sons of one of the greatest writers of the 20th century, Gabriel Garcia Marquez, the most translated Spanish language author in the world. He's one of his books, the one that we'd all know, I think it's 100 Years of Solitude or Love in the Time of Cholera. One of them sold 10 million copies alone. So he's just a giant of literature, especially South American literature. He started a novel and then got dementia. The novel was left unfinished, and his sons, there was a, you can imagine the debate. The debate was, well, he was writing it while he was suffering severe mental decline. Will it damage his legacy? Do we publish it, or do we just leave it unpublished? Well, they've gone ahead and published it. I wanted to speak to you, if you've had a parent who has demented or got Alzheimer's, and it's just an excuse to throw the spotlight on what dealing with a parent who is suffering dementia or Alzheimer's or a precipitous mental decline, what it's like and what decisions you have to make. A lot of them are heartbreaking decisions. They can certainly divide families, or they can unite families. But it's a, I know it's a very difficult thing to have to negotiate. And I want to know what your experience has been of that particular phenomenon. 133693. But I thought I'd speak to my next guest about the ethics of it. And he's very well equipped to deal with such a question. He's Leslie Canold, Associate Professor of Ethics and Impact at the Cranlana Centre for Ethical Leadership at Monash University. Good afternoon, Leslie.
Good afternoon to you. Thank
I
you so
misgendered
much for
you. I'm so sorry, Leslie. Please don't cancel me. How are you going? Your thoughts on this. I mean, many people have had a parent who has suffered from dementia or Alzheimer's, and they've had to deal with that. This is, I guess, an unusual one. From an ethical point of view, how do you view it?
Well, actually, I don't think it is that unusual in the sense that we all have things that we want to have happen after we die.
Yeah.
So we all, you know, leave wills, we leave instructions. We tend to focus mostly about things like, you know, how we want to go, whether we want, you know, extraordinary efforts or, you know, how we want our end of life care to proceed. But we also leave things to people. We want to leave this to someone else. And if we're writers or musicians or people who've created a kind of work, you know, a set of works, an oeuvre, you know, through our lives, we'll have a view about what we want to happen to those things too. So I think it isn't unusual to have to grapple with what I think is the dilemma that the sons faced, which is that the person who created those works had a particular viewpoint about whether or not he wanted to have that book that he began after he became ill published, which is that he didn't want it to be released, and then the subsequent decision they made to release it anyway.
Okay, here's how they justify that decision. It's, you know, and you'd be gratified to know that the sons aren't bad at turning a phrase either. They write, judging the book to be much better than we remembered, another possibility occurred to us, that the fading faculties that kept him from finishing the book kept him from realizing how good it was. Their betrayal, in inverted commas, then, has consisted in putting readers' pleasure ahead of all other considerations. Do you think that might be just a fig leaf for them cashing in, if you want to be cynical?
Oh, I wasn't actually that cynical. But look, I think what's going on, you know, here is that what they had decided was, and perhaps for that motivation, the problem with motivations is that they're hidden, right? We can guess, but we don't really know. But the one thing we do actually know without having to know anything about what was going on in their minds and how they were motivated is that they decided to put their view, which is that the book was good, and the idea that, you know, the consequence of that, that there were going to be these readers who were going to be made happy in their view by the book being published, that that mattered more than honoring the trust that was placed in them by their father, and also, I think, arguably a legal obligation, but maybe not, but certainly a kind of moral obligation, when you pick an executor, when you pick people to kind of administer your papers or your letters or your whatever your oeuvre is, you pick somebody you're going to trust. You pick somebody you think you can say to, look, this is what I want, and have them executed, because you're helpless. You're dead. So you can't actually come back at them if they don't do the right thing. It's an ultimate gesture of trust.
Well,
and so I guess to me it feels not very ethical.
Okay. Is that because a dementing person can't consent? And in this case, he couldn't consent to it being published?
I don't think that's clear from what we know. So in other words, it is certainly possible that after he got a diagnosis of dementia, that he would have made that decision. And it's not clear. I mean, just because you get the early signs of dementia doesn't mean you're not capable of making a decision that has legal force, because you still have, you're still compos mentis, essentially.
Yeah.
So I suspect that, you know, that would turn on the question as to whether or not he was actually capable. But what we tend to do in ethics is we tend to say, it's not that you're overall have, you know, compos mentis and you can make all your decisions, or you've got no capacity and you can't make any decisions. It's decision per decision. And I would have thought that the decision that you would make after you got a diagnosis about something as primary to his life as writing and his sense of his own legacy, that he would have been able to have said, I don't want this to happen. And if that's at the point where he did say it, then I really think the rest is kind of rationalization. You know,
right.
For whatever reason they had, they wanted to do something different. And as I said, he can't come back at them. So they're kind of free to do that. And the only thing that really impinges them is their kind of honouring of what his wishes were.
Okay, I'm going to put this to you, this question to you as an associate professor of ethics. With all that considered, could you sit down, if you're a fan, and I don't know if you are, but he's...
I am.
Yeah, could you sit down and then in good conscience read this book?
I feel really uncomfortable about the book being out there. Now that it's out there, it feels like a kind of separate question again as to whether or not I should read it. But I feel very uncomfortable with the fact that that's the decision they made, because it feels like a rationalization and a betrayal of trust. And I'm particularly sensitive to that kind of thing. Like, if somebody made me an executor of a will, or, you know, a person's work, I would honor what they told me to do, regardless of how I felt about it.
That is a beautifully considered answer. Leslie, thank you. I really appreciate that.
It was a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Leslie Canold, Associate Professor of Ethics and Impact at the Cranlana Centre for Ethical Leadership at Monash Uni.